Hello, and welcome to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, and doing our audio engineering today is James Ziprot. Here on Teen Scientist, I bring you stories of groundbreaking innovations in the STEAM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective. We feature young researchers and respected experts in their fields at the local, national, and international levels. Zena, it's great to have you on Teen Scientist. How are you?
I'm doing great, Abigail. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. You're a 17-year-old researcher from San Diego who recently won a Davidson Fellowship for your work. Tell us a bit about your background and what first got you interested in science.
Yeah, so like you said, I'm well now 18 from.
So sorry.
No worries. It's been a little while, but I have always been interested in science from the get-go. Just thinking creatively and applying logic to different phenomena, whether it be in the cell or in the environment, has always been super appealing to me. And I feel like it's the most tangible way anybody can make impact. So I've loved always getting my hands dirty. And I'm really fortunate ha to have taken it to the next level, especially in starting in high school, where I got to work on some really cool projects, which we might talk about and help other students also explore their budding interest in science too.
Yeah, what you've accomplished in just such a short amount of time and so young already is quite wild, to be honest. But aside from science, you're also an accomplished swimmer and musician. How do these passions fit into your life alongside science?
Well, being a native from San Diego, I have firm belief that everybody should know swimming, not just for a leisure activity, but also I think it's a very valuable life skill. Like whether if let's say you're alongside a pool or a lake and someone is drowning, you could save them or you could
Yeah.
even save or save yourself. So I mean I've loved swimming and I primarily picked it up because my parents don't know how to swim.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it's also super fun too, by the way, just going to the beach, going to the pool. It's a great way to make friends. And as for music, I've also been playing piano since I was 4, and it's been my number one cornerstone of life. If there's anything that I will never drop in my life, it's playing classical piano. So it's an awesome way to de-stress, also, again, meet new people. I think all of these activities involve just building network, and it's a great way to do so.
You have kind of different worlds in a sense with people and who you meet. So that's nice too that you can get a variety and meet a lot of different people. Onto your piano, do you have a favorite piece of music that you like to play?
I love the Romantic era, so that's like
Oh,
Chopin, Rachmaninoff, Prokofiev. I'm recently trying to pick up Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto again. It's been a little gap since college finals, but it's my favorite piece, and it has been. Well, I guess I would actually say whichever classical piece I've listened to latest is my favorite because honestly, it changes every day.
Yeah, it's like music taste almost. You have a new favorite song. It's,
Yes.
yeah. So diving into your early inspiration and background, I've heard that you're interested in biomedical research and it was sparked by a family experience. Can you share that story?
Yeah, of course. So my aunt, she didn't initially have type 1 diabetes, but actually after being prescribed like an overdose of medication, developed type 1 diabetes when she was younger. But in all my life, right, she has had type 1 diabetes, and I
Right,
mean, growing up, like she would take insulin injections multiple times a day, different ones depending on like there's a long-term one, there's a short-term one, and I don't have to take any, fortunately, and I was always like, as a kid who didn't like injections in the beginning, not that
yeah.
I'm particularly fond of them now, but I'm okay with them for sure. I was like, why does she have to take these injections? And
Right, the curiosity.
exactly. And so, I mean, think about you get like a common cold. You can take Tamiflu, for instance, if you have the flu, right?
Yeah.
And you can get better in like 5 or 6 days. I mean, for type 1 diabetes, there's not any pill you can pop and get better. And
Right.
so I was always very curious about like the distinction between different classes of illness and the different medications that exist out there, and essentially how can we make treatments for metabolic disease. And I guess when I was exploring this, I realized that there are an array of diseases which fall under the category of broader metabolic diseases, and they all don't have, I guess, treatments. And so my question was, okay, is there a way that we can develop some sort of therapeutic that can address all of these diseases in one go?
So that brings us to Scientella. Is that kind of how you came up with that idea?
Scientella is a little bit separate. I
That's the
mean,
nonprofit for young women, right? So with this, what is the project you're talking about now then?
so this project is related to
The
my research.
ISR, right? The integrated stress
Yes,
response. Yeah,
exactly.
got it. Yes.
And Scientella is like a side endeavor I have.
Yes.
I've been working with a student, Raquel, who is now an incoming medical student at UCSF, which is super exciting for her. And she founded the organization in 2021, and I joined shortly after she founded. And we've been leading it together, now expanded internationally, and almost have over 1,000 matches where we pair students with companies like Microsoft, Illumina, and ResMed, so they get exposure doing research and getting their hands dirty in science as well.
Yeah, that's sorry for the mix-up, but the work you do with Scientella is quite incredible because it's a nonprofit for young women in STEM like yourself, and being a part of that is quite incredible. But kind of going back, your ISR, which was what you were talking about, was uniquely activated by the mitochondrial dysfunction. What is the ISR? And then we often hear about heat shock response or oxidative stress. How is the ISR different from those? And why is it significant that the ISR was one of the only one activated?
So I guess I can back up and give a little bit of background about why
Yes.
the ISR, like why I was even looking for such a mechanism.
Right.
So underlying a bunch of metabolic diseases is mitochondrial dysfunction. And unlike other types of cellular dysfunction, the root cause for mitochondrial dysfunction has been unknown. Specifically, the cells have these components called stress-responsive signaling pathways. And in a typical healthy state, whether it's a cell or a person, these stress-responsive signaling pathways are appropriately upregulated whenever there is some sort of cellular stress to help prevent the cell from being further stressed to a point of, like, for instance, apoptosis or cell death. And
Right.
so for mitochondrial dysfunction, this mechanism that was abnormally suppressed in disease states was unknown. And so, as you can probably infer, if a mechanism is abnormally suppressed, one of the therapeutic strategies to help a patient with such a condition is to figure out a way to upregulate it or to activate it again, right?
Yes.
And so the only way you can do that is to know what mechanism you even want to target. And so the first part of my project was figuring out, okay, what is this mechanism, which was the ISR. Previously, scientists have suggested that the oxidative stress response and the heat shock response have been regulators of mitochondrial dysfunction. However, some experiments proved that that was not the case. It was indeed just the ISR, or predominantly, I should say, but being predominantly responsible for mitochondrial dysfunction, it made it a really promising therapeutic direction because it
Yeah.
is just, of course, more selective. You of course don't want to develop therapeutics which have off-target effects. And so, once we figured out that the ISR was the case, the next segment of the work is, can we develop any sort of therapeutics to selectively target it? And so, I think I should have answered all the questions that you asked. Let me know if I missed anything.
Yes, you did. And then following into that, you coded an algorithm so other scientists could use it. With your gene set profiling algorithm, why did you choose to do that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the gene set profiling algorithm was essentially my way of uncovering the ISR was the predominant stress response. But, like, the way I built it was just so that you could take any sort of, like, for instance, like a sequencing file or data file. I used published perturbed seq data. You could take any sort of data set and input it in your like read file program of the algorithm,
Right,
and
yeah.
you could essentially tweak the program very simply to whatever condition, whatever, I guess, organelle you're interested in finding.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to kind of create a program, so it makes it a lot easier. One of the exciting parts of your project was looking for drugs that could affect this pathway, like you mentioned earlier. How did you go about researching for the drug candidates that you used?
Well, so unfortunately, this work is not yet published, so I don't think I have
Okay.
the ability to speak too
Yeah.
much on this. But I think it is definitely a very, like, drug repurposing in general is a very interesting field, and also I think a very practical field because there are so many medications that are already out there, and just because they might work for a certain condition and they've been tested for a certain condition doesn't mean that they have applicability in others as well. So I think I can just speak on how remarkable drug repurposing is in general. It saves a lot of work in terms of going through the FDA for a drug that is brand new, like de novo. And so I think it's a very interesting, promising, and time-saving approach.
Yeah, that was my next question. In a sense, could you just broadly explain exactly what is drug repurposing?
Yeah, of course. Let's say you have drug X and it's responsible for treating condition Y. Then theoretically, and this is a very oversimplified explanation, you could repurpose or you could assign a different role of drug X to a different condition, say condition Z. So now drug X has the ability to treat both condition Y and Z, but it, in essence, always had that ability to treat condition Z. It's just never been explored yet. And so that's why, in the field of drug repurposing, you try to see, okay, what therapeutics are out there that actually have a broader, range of impact on other conditions that has not been previously explored.
Yeah, and why is it useful for finding these treatments fast?
Well, if you have, let's say, a therapeutic that you're creating from scratch,
Yeah.
the timeline to go through FDA approvals is really long and also understandably long. Like, you want to make sure
Right.
that the drugs are not having any sort of imperative side effect on any patients, which is why clinical trials are there and also why there are so many types of clinical
If
trials.
you could estimate, if you had to start at scratch, how long would you think it would take?
Oh, it really depends on the drug.
Oh,
So
okay.
I wouldn't necessarily be able to give like a certain number,
So it
but
just depends on what you're doing and how many clinical trials that you need to go through and testing that you need to go through. Are there different rules throughout what you're doing? Like with different drugs comes different rules.
yes, there
Okay.
definitely are. There's so many depending on the modality that you have, but that might be a little bit too extensive for this conversation.
So, back on to why is it so useful finding treatments fast?
Well, of course, you want to help patients as quickly as possible, but also in the most safest manner as possible. So, of course, you don't want to be trying to develop a drug that's going to take like 50 years, right? I mean, not
Right.
that drugs generally take 50 years, but
Yeah,
they
you want to get it
definitely,
out.
exactly. Like,
Yes.
you want to maximize the bench to bedside impact. And so, of course, you want to develop treatments as quickly as possible and treatments that are also the safest. And
Right.
so ultimately, everything is just funneling into this idea of we want to help patients as much as we can. And so drug repurposing is just another avenue of doing so.
Right. And I don't know if you're allowed to share, but do you know with the interested drugs, I know you can't share those, what diseases could help with the ones that you have found or are still researching?
Oh, yeah, that of course, I mean, I can share. I think so many scientists are working on this. I mean, like I mentioned, my project is related to mitochondrial dysfunction, which is implicated in metabolic diseases and neurodegenerative diseases in particular, such as Parkinson's diabetes, like Parkinson's for neurodegenerative
Yeah.
diabetes for metabolic, and also a little bit more rare diseases like Charcot-Marie-Tooth, and so forth. So there's definitely still a wide umbrella of conditions that these drugs can help address, and that's what makes this work so exciting because the TAM, the total addressable market, is just so big here.
I was just going to say it's incredible how one thing can help so many different diseases. Well, I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with Teen Scientist with Zena Katar, and we are going to take a short break.
WDIY News engages the local community through accurate, unbiased reporting from many sources with volunteer real voices. Listen to WDIY News weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. and 4 to 6 p.m. and weekends from 8 to 10 a.m. WDIY News, available live on 88.1 FM and online at wdiy.org.
We're back with Teen Scientist here with Zena Katar, and I'm your host, Abigail Wood. So you worked with professors and graduate students at Scripps Research, and you co-authored a paper in Molecular Biology of the Cell. Can you tell us about collaborating on that publication?
Of course. I mean, this was my co-first author publication, and I was very excited to contribute to this paper, not only because it was like a culmination of all the work that I've been doing, but also because the folks that I worked with are literally the smartest people that I've ever met. I worked with a series of professors and graduate students, and being a high school student at that point, it was, and it still is, even as an undergrad, so inspiring to meet so many scientists who are so deep in their career, who are just
Right.
so knowledgeable. And so, I mean, I learned essentially how to write an abstract, how to create figures that are interpretable. Like, you'd be surprised at how important it is to make sure that any sort of data that you're presenting is understood by the broader audience.
Yes.
And writing exactly in a clear, concise manner, what were the methods that you used? I think writing the paper was by far one of the most collaborative things that I've ever done because I had no knowledge of writing papers before this, but like
Right, yeah.
you have to write a manuscript, you submit it to like a journal, and it's not done just there, right? Like, these
Right.
papers are peer reviewed, so you get other scientists who read your manuscript and they reach back out to you and they're like, hey, can you elaborate on this a little bit more? Like, this doesn't make sense, or can you fix this? And then you send it back again. And so, I mean, it was really very insightful, just going through the
The whole
process and
process, yeah.
getting feedback from other parties about different avenues that you could explore that we had not thought of. And so it was an awesome experience.
That sounds awesome. What was it like being published as a high school student, that feeling?
Oh, it was so exciting. And I don't think I realized, like,
How impact,
how,
yeah.
yeah, exactly, how not only impact, like, I know publications are so impactful, but I mean, at that stage, I wasn't ever like eyeing a publication as a high school student. So the
Right.
fact that like the work was really great enough to be publication worthy was just so cool. And like what I said earlier, like I did not even imagine that. So it was so cool. And my mentor was telling me how cool this was, and I was just sitting and like soaking it all up. It was so cool.
I know sometimes it can be like a shock, and then you don't real like in the moment you're just like in awe, and then after you're like, wow.
Exactly.
How did you feel to contribute to real scientific literature, like you said, as a high school student? And then, especially, you didn't go into this whole thing out of, I want to get a research, like, I want to get a paper out of this. You came into this looking, oh, I want to change something. So, how has that kind of shifted now your view going towards the future, too?
Well, yes, I think I have, like, I know there's some folks who are very interested in public getting their work published, which
Right.
I think is like obviously a great goal to have. But I personally have this philosophy, like, okay, I have Like, this is a question I want to answer. And then I work towards it. And then, like, only after a certain stage in the project where I'm like, okay, wait, I actually have some interesting results, then I think about, like, okay, is
Right.
this worthy of publishing?
Can it go further?
Yeah, so I think I generally try to look more at, okay, how can I help society first? And then think of publishing or
Yeah.
publicizing work. Well, I'm very excited that I got exposed to molecular bio so early because it's definitely something that I still have by far the most interested in. And I'm interested in concentrating, or that's concentration equivalent to a major at my college.
Oh,
And so
nice.
I hope to study molecular bio in the future and see what I can do with it further.
How important do you think collaboration and opening sharing of data are in science since you made your code open?
I think it's like the number one most important thing. Like, if science had an alternate definition, I would say it's like a collaborative subject of innovation or something.
That's a
Like,
great way to put it, yeah.
yeah, you cannot do science without collaboration. I mean,
No.
you don't want to recreate the wheel. And like, so many people discover new things every single day. Like, just look at all the journals that come out on like even like a weekly basis. It just groundbreaking and incredible work that people have been doing all across the world. And so, like, these days, I mean, of course, there are people who are creating something so utterly novel, but also most of the work is building off of others' work and improving it. So, if science were not collaborative, I don't know what we'd have.
I think that's the best thing, like you said, about science is how collaborative it is and how many people can work off of each other. And I think, like you said, it is one of the most important things to stay open and collaborative. So, kind of heading in a different direction. So, how was your first year at Harvard?
Oh, it's been so cool. We just finished finals, so it's awesome to be back home in California.
Oh, the
College has
weather's
been,
probably so much nicer.
it is so nice, I have to say. Although Boston did definitely open up, there was a lot of sunshine the past few days, so I got a chance to step out of the Cambridge area,
But yeah.
go to Newton. It is so pretty. Like, I've never seen that many trees for so long. Like, we had a really long winter this time. So many trees had no leaves for so long. So I
It was
mean,
nice to see that.
I've never seen such seasons like that before. It's so cool.
Yeah, because California, it's just warm a lot of the time, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you had all four seasons in Boston. What have you been doing at Harvard and kind of contributing towards in your first year?
I've been so drawn to the Boston area because I think it's like it produces the most research, and just there's just so many people who are working on really intellectual work in like
Right.
the science, ML, AI domain. So I've been collaborating with scientists in the Boston area as well, exploring really new subjects which I've never touched before at Harvard,
That's
and
cool.
meeting a whole bunch of new friends who are really incredible in all the different subjects that they specialize in. And that's made them stand out also on such a world stage.
Yeah. Have you noticed in your classes, is it hands-on lectures, a mixture? Kind of how's school in a sense?
It really varies depending on the class.
Yeah.
Like, one class next door to another can be so different. I mean, for like some of the science classes I've taken, like, we have lecture a few times a week, and then we also have like 4-hour labs also like once a week, and then we have section, which is also very cool because you get to work through problems with grad students on campus. And then so that's like what maybe a typical science class would look like. And but then, like, for another class, like for us first years, we have to take a course called expository writing, which is a requirement for us all. For that, like, we just meet two
Yeah.
times a week, but we read through so many like different types of literature, not science literature at all, like
Interesting. Yeah,
American
just regular
literature,
literature.
Gothic literature, like really anything. And we write essays. And so for that, of course, we don't have lab, but we definitely have like these workshops with other students going through people's ideas and breaking away from the mold of writing that we're taught in high school. It's really cool, actually, too.
That's cool. Yeah. The classic five paragraphs, intro,
Yes.
middle, and in how to actually write a real paper. I can't wait to get into that in college. I'm so excited to advance in that. And then to finish off our segment, what advice do you have for other teens interested in science, especially girls and minorities?
This is actually something I was telling my sister the other day too. I think this is more directed for if you are a little interested in science. Don't lock yourself into one discipline. I'm not saying that I did. I definitely don't think I did, but I definitely wish that in addition to like delving into science, well, when I was younger, I also explored like economics as well, or just explore a bunch of tangential fields because you realize how interconnected they are. And like when you grow up, let's say you don't want to just become like, let's say like an engineer or something, but you want to explore like AI policy. Like that is like a very nice segment as well, which I think that if you just explore science, you might not get that exposure early on. But also learning about this in college is not too late as well, which is what I'm also very excited of exploring these really cool fields too.
Yeah, having a bunch of new topics to learn is kind of the whole thing. And I feel like if you're interested in science, like you said, you're very curious in general. And it's nice to get a broad aspect of different things in life. And
Exactly.
that's great advice. Yeah. So thank you so much, Sina Qatar, for joining us. I am so glad I had you, and congratulations to everything that you have accomplished and what you will accomplish in your future. This is Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood.